Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's arms. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber. Delve into a world of strange magic with incoherent dust and Victoria Frost. Fridays, I'll split between Crawling into Darkness with Pam and Break on Through. Saturday, join Ephesiana as she teaches how to be part sinner, part saint. And then on Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost with Hearts of Late Night Poets. Now, these shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Rex. How's it going?
All righty.
Awesome sauce. Looks like you got a good lineup of poetry tonight. As always, Bukowski is a great choice, filled up and filled out.
Yes, we got a nice bunch in there.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hanging out with you and some other cool poets. So
yes,
I'll go ahead.
As Chinaski would say, I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Care for tea?
Exactly. All right, so here we go. We have Randy. Welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, Randy.
Doing good. Yourself?
Just great, thank you.
Awesome.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. And we have an area code 360, which I believe is Babbler, but don't quote me on that. 360, you're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Oh, Zombie Aesthetic.
Ah, Zombie.
Zombie,
okay.
Welcome.
Glad you could join us. Welcome.
Hello.
You have the same area code as a couple of our other callers, so it'll take a while.
All right.
All right, and then... we have area code 770, which I believe to be Felon. And you're
Amen,
on
sister.
The air.
Hello,
hey,
Randy.
Hey,
good to be here. Sexy.
Good to hear you.
Miss Pam. Yeah, glad to be back. Hello, hello.
Well, all right, Pam. Why don't we get the goodies on the road?
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. We're going to go ahead and put Randy's poem up first. So when you're ready, give it a read for us, please.
Okay. it's entitled Reality Check. The Magician's Sleight of Hand, Fooling All But a Few. Flashing one hand around, the other is out of view. His pretty assistant fashioning about right on cue. Misdirection, the choice used to fool me and you. Politicians enjoy manipulating us with their words, bloviating endlessly to the gathered grazing herd, distracting listeners with claims that seem absurd, repeating them loudly to be sure that they all are heard. Our life is filled with misleading words and actions, trying to sell us on their next shiny new attraction, hoping to pique our interest, watching for a reaction. So once committed, there's no need for a retraction. I know this seems harsh, a life filled with confusion, feeling the indignity of an ego-damaging contusion. As we become victims of our own gullible delusion, leading us to believe that life's just a cruel illusion. In poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. And, Fel, since you're the last one in the door, you get to be the first one up front.
I'll be honest, if I can get off of mute. I think Randy, you really hit this one home with that last stanza there. It's, you know, that really spoke to me. I know this seems harsh, a life filled with confusion, feeling the indignity of an ego-damning contusion, as we all become victims of our own global delusions, leading us to believe that life's just a cruel illusion. And I think that's true because it's, you know, it's only as cruel as we let it be, and we only give power to whatever we allow to have power of our life and take from us that seed of happiness. So we can pick those weeds at any time and end those delusions of cruelty and know that the cruelty is just to ourselves, and it's something that we allow. And we have to just basically learn to put up blocks to keep those kind of things out. So I think this is an excellent write and in true Bukowski fashion. Great job.
Thanks, Phil.
Excellent, Phil. Thank you very much. Zombie, how about you?
Well, part of what fascinated me about this poem was the sort of a combination of the second and third stanza. I like the idea of sort of a merchant trying to sell somebody something. Our life is filled with misleading words and actions, trying to sell us on their next shiny new attraction. I do believe that a lot of like media and especially like consumer-based media, like social media and stuff, is really directed towards just selling people something, whether it be like an actual product or just an idea. There's a lot of maybe misinformation or just manipulated information that can really come across as harmful to some people or just inaccurate for other people. I think that putting that idea into this poem is really an awesome choice. I love the transitions throughout as well, and the word choice is really wonderful. Particularly, I love the use of sashaying and the indignity of an ego-damaging contusion. I felt like that phrase was really, like, packed a punch.
Thank you, Zombie.
Well said there, sir. Thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like this. It's got great end rhyme. I liked the title is great. It fits with the rest of the poem and the idea that we do need to be given that reality check, that too often words are used to manipulate and mislead us as well as actions. I like that line there in the third stanza. And I also like how in the ending stanza he wraps up at the start of the line being, I know this seems harsh, a life filled with confusion, feeling the indignity of an ego-damaging confusion. Now, the acknowledgement, yes, yeah, my words may seem harsh, but you're going to suffer more in the end if you don't really take time to listen and to look around and to pay attention to all the different sleight of hands that is going on around you. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Nicely said. Thank you, Pam. All right, Randy. I got to tell you, that first stanza stands out because you actually did everything that you put down with the last two. You came out up front with the first one. You pulled a little bit of sleight of hand magic yourself by opening up this way because you directed your poem one way. And then the last few stanzas, you brought it in-house to where you actually wanted one to look at and observe that which was going on by that misdirection. I love the thought that you went with a mono-rhyme for each stanza that led to a nice, easy flow into the next stanza, which led into a nice, easy flow into the next stanza beyond that. And like Felon, I too thoroughly enjoyed that last stanza. It hits home as far as the confusion, the contusion, the delusion, the illusion. And as far as what Pam said and Zombie, it is a matter of how we deal with it. And unfortunately, you got to open up your eyes first. Stop believing what you're told and go hunting for the truth. There you will find it.
Thanks, Rick.
Oh, you're very welcome. All right, Pam, we're back on you.
All right, Zombie, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
All righty. This is titled Wordly Divination. Look into the letters spread like tea leaves on your cardstock, some wet and some stuck in place, a fortune spilled, a taste, a Chinese gunpowder unfurled, a creeping stain, the water hid in little folds, drips onto the page. Hold your hand palm upward and peer into the lines that you have written into skin, the heart, the head, the life. A novel's worth of suffering, no, something divine, blue veins under scars buzzed with blood. Feel the words of others as they shuffle in your hands, a spread of cards before you, knotted in a Celtic cross, above and so below, past now and in time, grow the story read between the cards, between the lines, something between you and a queen of swords.
Great read, Zombie. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got to lead off on this. What'd you think?
Well, I like this. First of all, that was an excellent read. It's good to hear from you again, and I'm glad this time I can actually be on the show. I like that you went with the whole idea of the fortune teller and the reading the palm. And the intriguing thing about the palm reading is the way that the lines on your palm change as with different experiences in life. I like a fortune spilled, a taste, a Chinese gunpowder unfurled, a creeping stain, the water hid in the little folds drips onto the page. It's interesting how sometimes things like ideas or events come to you in like this almost like epic gunpowder type way, and other times they're those kind of little Chinese torture type water droplets. I really like the visceral imagery of under scars buzz with blood. It's the whole idea to me that your scars speaking to you. And this is great all the way through, but I have to say knotted in a Celtic cross was a really great touch to kind of represent. I see two different thoughts on that, either the idea of the kind of a physical tension or more the idea of a unity of like different areas of your life connecting. I think it's just a wonderful, intriguing, light, thought-provoking, and beautiful, and very well done.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Nicely said, Pam. Randy, how about you?
Yes, I thought this was wonderfully written, very well read, interesting throughout. I enjoyed the entire poem. I was intrigued by it. I especially liked the third stanza, hold your hand palm upward and peer into the lines that you have written into skin, the heart, the head, the life. The thought that that we create our own history and that we have written the lines in our hands that are being read, it was kind of intriguing to me. I really was really taken by that particular stanza, but I found the whole poem to be really interesting, and I really enjoyed it. Very well done.
Thank you, Randy. And Felon, how about you?
I like this because it's something of a mystery of life and how we all try to get to that answer of what the future holds for us. And we lay it in cards, we lay it in the lines, but at the same time, it's whatever happens, you really can't predict, fix what's going to happen. You just have to go along with it. And I think that what really spoke to me is, as novels worth of suffering, no, something divine, blue veins, under scars, buzz with blood, because that is the truth. We are all under these scars of life. Even though they're not visible to others, they're visible to us, and they do run deep, and they do run alternated with other shit that happened to us. So I think this is an excellent ride. I think it's very witty and intelligent and just brilliant. I enjoyed it a great deal. Great job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
As he said, Ben, thank you. Zombie, I too like the thought you wrote, ran with the motif with the tea leaves, the palmistry, and the tarot cards as the base for the thought that you got running here. I like also that thought within the knotted in a Celtic cross and under scars buds with blood. There's that thought of actually listening to your ancestors, looking back and remembering those lives, because those lives brought you to this point, and you're supposed to lead into the next point on. And this other thought you've gotten here, that second last stanza, above and so below, now that's an ancient, that goes right back to Egypt and beyond, as their planning thoughts for what they see above is what they want on the ground, the thoughts how the pyramids are shaped, the placement of the of the Sphinx and so on, and mystical alignments that so many other countries around the world adopted. You go the Mayas, the Aztecs, the Incas, and God, just about everywhere across the planet, they used the stars and they brought them down to Earth because they wanted that part, because they knew eventually the heavens would be the normal place where they would end up afterwards. So they want the repetition from then to here, and then the ascension when they die was from here to there. So I like that thought. And then that a nice touch of that couplet at the end, something between you and the Queen of Swords. I'm not really up on my tarot at the moment, so I can't remember what the Queen of Swords is a representation of. But I like this. It's most enjoyable.
Thank you. A lot of what I was thinking about while writing was, a lot of my family is actually Wiccan, so I'm familiar with a bit of fortune telling stuff throughout my life, at least studied a little bit of it. And that idea you were talking about, like our connections between past and blood, was something of what inspired me while writing this, the idea of like the story that we carry with us onward. Thank you for your commentary. I like that. And the Queen of Swords is sort of like almost like a family figure, probably not entirely accurate, but like a wiser, older, almost like motherly figure of like guidance.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
You know, like me. Sorry.
Well, actually, yeah, you might not wheel out some swords, but your tongue is quite witty.
It's mean.
That too, but yeah, you don't always throw out the darts with your tongue, although you can, but you're good damn funny too.
Oh Lord!
All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right, Felon, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Oh, thank you. You did the right one, the prodigies of wrongs. Thank you, Pam, thank you. Prodigies to wrongs. Prodigies of wrongs pins. Fills the dig, bleeding reality. Crafts ways a wrist twist. Words wounded speak students to hell's prodigy. Sins label behavior. Hostage to thoughts, lingering the matters, rafters. Dangling upside down, waiting to feast on my wrongs. Teeth seeking in insecurity's rapture. Society free for all menu to judgment spawn. Strength firing off slow, healing men's, shoveling shit in an open mouth. Tell me, now who wears a grin? Exposing skeletons and tongue-in-cheek drought? End poem.
Great read, Fel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Randy, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Oh, I love this. I was caught up in the whole thing as she was reading it, and it's very well written. It's a good read. Something caught me on the hostage to thoughts lingering, the matter's raptor, dangling upside down, waiting to feast upon my wrongs. I had the vision as she was reading that of being in a place where vampire bats are hanging from the ceiling, waiting to descend and sink their teeth into the insecure person below. So I thought it was a very
family does that
powerful. I thought it was a very powerful image, and I really liked it. Very well done, Phil.
Thank you, Randy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Randy. And Zombie, how about you?
I really love the phrasing in this poem. The first line itself is super striking. Ink spills, the dig bleeding reality. That's some really powerful phrasing to like bleed out reality. And throughout the entirety of the poem, you use some really like strong, like evocative words that just create such wonderful imagery, but also like not just the image itself, but the undertone, emotional undercurrent of that imagery. The third stanza, the beginning of it, strength firing off slow healing men. If it were just like, even just the word slow adds so much to that idea, the fact of like a healing creeping along instead of being an instant like potion of regeneration, you know. I really love the your word choice and the picture that you paint here.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot because I had someone comment on this and they were basically saying that it was lost its breath or something, and that less is more. And I was like, you don't obviously know me because this is like a long piece for me. This is like really long for me. You know, I had to meet a certain quota of words, and he just went on and on. So it really means a lot to me that you say that, because he really made me feel kind of almost, you know, deleted this poem because of him, because he just went on and on and on. And then when I went and read his stuff, I'm thinking, less is more. You just, your last one was almost 40 words more than mine, and it was the same thing as you said. As the cadence was the same. I was like, well, what the hell? Well, but I didn't say nothing yet. But believe me, it's coming. It's coming. So thank you. It means a lot to me. Thank you.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, it's definitely a nice written poem, as always. You got some strong lines here. I like hostage to thought, lingering the matters, rafters, dangling upside down, waiting to feast on my wrongs. You know, it's so easy to be our own worst enemy and to pass judgment on ourselves. But then I really like the strength firing off slow healing men's shovels shed in open mouths. Tell me now who wears a grin. You know, everyone who judges, including ourselves, you know, eventually we find the strength to turn about and say, you know what, I'm worth speaking up for. I'm worth standing up for myself for. And I really, really like this. Excellent writing. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And you nailed it, because that is exactly what was my thought process in that with the rafters, is because we get caught up in it. We take our own thoughts hostage, and we get caught up in our own mind, and yet we wait to feast on our own wrongs, you know, and then we let society, and we basically blur them out for society to see and hear, and yet we get mad and pissed when they get judgmental about it and feast upon us as well. And we're on the menu, but we put ourselves there. So thank you for seeing that. That's what I was trying to say.
My pleasure.
Well, damn, honey, you just ruined all my thoughts.
Well, damn, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I love that opening stanza. Ink spills to dig bleeding reality. Craft sways a wrist's twist. Now, there's a nice ease of thought in that. It goes to writing and the thought that goes into the twist within in the words offered, that the wrist the twist. It's a nice thought right there. Words wounded, speak student to hell's prodigy, sin labels behavior recidivist. I like the fact that you use recidivist. There's that person who always goes back to, or is placed in that realm of always going back to that one crime,
yep.
One crime. And that second one kind of hits me as that sort of being labeled, and kind of, you go into questioning yourself. That's where the hostage comes from. And with that comes the, like you said, insecurities rafter, the little blades that come with the free-for-all that goes with it. But the last one hits on that thought of fuck them all. I say it like it is. If they don't like it, that's just tough shit. And the idea up with the first stanza isn't the thought of actually hurting people. You know, it comes, you play your battle, that's the way it is. I mean, you walk in that world, you got to stand in that world. You can't cry about it. So the thought, you ended up with the last couple of lines, the shovel shitting open mouths, tell me now who wears a grin, exposing skeletons, his tongue and cheek drow. That is a thought of, yeah, who's smiling now, motherfucker? That's me.
Yeah, lace them up, buttercup. Suck it up like I've been doing all the time.
So I like the humor that you dropped at the bottom end of it, because it tells the whole story from top to bottom.
Yeah, we put ourselves in our own positions that we get in. So, I mean, I'm learning to know my place and my responsibility and my bullshit and drama. So I can't blame it on anyone other than me too. So I've been learning to take ownership of my bullshit. So that's what basically it is. So I'm glad I got to write it.
That's progressive thought there, Phil.
Thank you. Got to make it here tonight. I miss you guys so much.
Hell, we've missed you. I can't remember the last time I heard your voice.
Well, this new job is killing me. It's killing me, man. I turned 50 today, and I think I'm too damn old to do this job. Yeah, I'm like, golly, I don't think I'm ready, but I'm getting back in the swing of things. My health is doing great, so I'm doing great, and I'm back. I'm back, so y'all get ready.
Oh, that sounds like a threat and a promise.
Oh, always.
All right, Pam, where you want to drive us next?
Up next is Carousing by Mary Dark, and give that a read, Rex.
Carousing by Myriad Dark. There is an illusion. Life is an absolute, when in fact it is more a distraction, much like sex or a suicide letter written as prose, an alliteration of breaking bread, like drawing a blade poised across puckered skin, a poem of blood flowing freely, eyes closed tight while tossing and turning in your deathbed. There is poetry in madness. It screams and defecates and is plastered over the walls. Sweeping statements, such voices sing. Earworms niggling in your oxygen-starved brain. It is not for the faint-hearted. It is tears of the poppy to a dry-eyed addict. This is not salvation. It is a savaging of the flesh, brutal with rape intent. They are not lullabies to put you to sleep. They are viscera torn from opening up wounds by your shrink. It is the elephant in the room no one wants to talk about. The pedophile uncle, the light that bends as he assaults you from behind his glasses. And death awaits us all in the end, just as sex becomes another meat market. And the music that once consoled us in our tears becomes just more static and white noise roaring in our ears. And gone. Hot damn. Pam, would you like to comment first on that one? Phil, how about you?
I am just taken back by this. Just the right off the rip. There is an illusion. Life isn't absolute. I mean, in fact, it's more a distraction, much like sex or a suicide letter. I mean, how can you compare those two, really? Because one's just like, woo, and the other's like, oh, God. but alliteration of breaking bread, and I think that's, you know, when breaking bread is when you feast and you feed your mind and you feed your soul. So like drawing a blade poised across puckered skin, and that's when you skin that is knows that something's coming, the strike is coming, but yet it still tries to defend itself in, you know, in involuntary movement. So, there's so many points in this poem that just reaches out. It is an elephant in the room no one wants to talk about. The pedophile uncle, the right that bends as he assaults you from behind his glasses, and death awaits us all in the end, just as sex becomes another meat market. This strikes home for me, and I mean, but at the same time, I'm in a place now that I don't get offended to hear things like this. I'm glad that someone can share something like this and then actually put it to words. That's something that I've been wanting to say that I can't. And I think that this person does this very well. And just, wow, I'm very amazed with this poem. It's just, this hits home. But at the same time, this is one to put on my reading list. Excellent job.
Great comment, Phil. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Randy, How about you?
Oh,
I thought that this was. I thought that this poem was like really, really like powerfully written. A part that stuck out to me a lot was, "And death awaits us all, and in the end, just as sex becomes another meat market, and the music that once consoled us in our tears becomes just more static and white noise roaring in our ears." I felt that one particularly because there was a point in my life where I was like really like horribly depressed, almost couldn't get out of bed every day, and I would listen to just this one Typo Negative album over and over and over again on the loudest volume in the speakers in my room. And it's at that point, like, there's when you listen to a certain type of music at a period of time where you're feeling so awful and down, part of you can come to associate that music with just like the static of the event happening, how it feels to have a traumatic experience like creep into your body, have that memory last there. And I feel like this poem, the way that it's formatted and the way that each stanza breaks is really impactful visually on how the poem is read and how the poem is interpreted. And I think that it's like super well written. It's like a part of it makes me speechless because I'm very impressed by it. The word choice, the phrasing, I think that it's all just extremely impactful. And I can't sing praises for it enough. I think it's very good.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Salvi. Pam, how about you? You back?
Sorry, I missed that one.
Did you mutated?
I missed it, sorry.
Oh, you missed a damn good piece. This is stark. It's stark and revealing. I like to set up with the extra spacing in between each line. It offers up a little bit of more impact. I mean, that first stanza down to the prose, much like when in fact it is more distraction, much like sex or a suicide letter written as prose. I think that was a nice lead-in because then you hit on the thought of there is poetry in madness. So it hits on those two notes. Don't give me the prose. Just give me the reality in the poetry that's offered. A poem of blood flowing freely, eyes closed tight while tossing and turning in your deathbed. There's that note. Hey, let me put the last things to paper as I'm meeting my maker, so to speak. And then the story also, it screams and defecates and is plastered over the walls, sweeping statements, such voices saying, don't give me the dull, the dry, the enigmatic. Give me the bold. Slap me in the face. Let me see what you got to offer. Let me dine on it. Let me revel in it. Let me bathe in it. This is what I get out of this. It's that thought of, hey, you know, even with the stark raving thoughts of opening up to your shrink, the elephant in the room, the thought of a poppies, the pedo uncle, all that hits on those notes of kind of a classic type of Bukowski thought, but it's really stark and it sits right in front of your face. It's telling you, I'm here, read me deeply. All right, Pat, we're coming back your
way. I agree.
Hell yeah, that was...
All right, yeah, well said there, Rex. Uh-huh, I'm here. All right. I need to step away for a few minutes. So I've put up Bleeding Roses by Betty Page. And Kellen, go ahead and read that, please.
Absolutely, I'd be honored to. Let me get back to that. I'm sorry, Pam. And here we go. It is... Well, doggone it, people quit putting things on here. This is by Betty Page, and this is called Roses, record number 2,853, 41321, Bleeding Roses. Spilling cascading venomous crimsons, stained ink, poetry on page. Juliet's heartless Romeo strolls down sleek streets, moves to his heartbeat. Chaos captured sweet misfits linger in alleys drunken on divine pain. Ripping their hearts out, gripping, squeezing the love out, sent as pretty gifts. Tied up in gold strings, tangled sharp in wedding rings,
karma consumes me. Swings high, misery smashing, crushing, swiftly down, splattering her heart. Numbs, fine heroin, highly addictive, toxic, penetrating me. Grimm's fairy daydreams drown in melancholy skies. Snowy owls wise. Clever his disguise, mystical rock and rolled stars, magic crystal balls. Peach, serenade, mask and masquerades, fancy halls, tea cakes, feeling small. Careful rainbow, caterpillars, smoke up shrooms, sticky delicious. Flirt spewing, icing, relentless tease, not smack, wildly smitten. End poem.
Great read, Fel. Thank you very much. And Dobby, why don't you start us off? What'd you think?
I really enjoyed this, right? I feel like it uses a lot of really vivid imagery. The idea of like chaos captured sweet, misfits linger in alleys, drunk on divine pain. I think that the contrast between like this idea of divine things and then painful things is really evokes what talking about a lot of the drug use that's in, referenced in the poem, like with heroin and shrooms that are referenced. I feel like the peacefulness of some of these things, as well as the strange, toxic lethargy that comes along with that as well. It's a really fascinating thing, and I think that those that sort of aesthetic has been captured really well through the word choice.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Zombie. All right, Sal, tell me what you think. You got to read it.
Oh, I like this. I mean, I think that she touched on a lot of the bleeding roses. She touched from the venomous of you know, crimson stain on the poetry to the that of the and into the that of Romeo and Juliet, because of course, you know, talking about, oh my God, Shakespeare, going in that, wrapping out that, and then the ripping of the hearts and squeezing in the love, and to me, and the pretty gifts, to me that spoke Edgar Allan Poe in a way, and then tied up in golden strings, tangled sharp red rings, consume me, and I think that's just a little bit of a touch of her, and then the swings high misery, and then it just goes on into you know, each little stanza could stand on its own. And this is just a deep write, and it touches on many, many layers, and it makes a beautiful cake at the end. I mean, like she says, you know, the flirt spewing, icing, relentless tease, not smack, wildly smitten. And this did leave me wildly smitten. So this is an excellent, excellent write, Betty Page. Great job. Great take on the prompt.
Yeah, this is a little different from Betty. Well, I like that thought, too. The Shakespeare angle, Juliet's heartless Romeo strolls down sleek streets, moves to his heartbeat, and a chaos-captured sweet misfits linger. Now he's drunk on divine pain. I like what Zombie had to say about that divine pain angle. But that kind of hit me on those two stanzas of Free Falling by Tom Petty.
Yeah.
You know, that thing of vampires walk down Ventura Boulevard, the good girls are at home crying. That's what that hit me up with there. And that karma consumes me with that tangled sharp and wedding rings was pretty cool. But the back end of this runs down the rabbit hole because you've got Grimm's fairy daydreams, clever his disguise, mystical rock and roll stars, magical crystal balls. And you got the caterpillar smoke up shrooms, sticky delicious. So she, it's kind of that looking into those girls who end up on the street, or maybe the strip bars, and their life turns a little bit different, and it comes with the mushrooms, the crystal balls, the heroin, and then she hits on that relentless tease, not smack, wildly smitten. That's one of her little favorite touches of the I kind of like this life. Give me some more.
This is very different for Betty Page. I'm like whoa. She's evolving. She's evolving. Her pieces are evolving more and more, and I think that's what makes a good writer, stepping out the box.
Yeah, she's been playing outside the lines lately, which is nice. All right, Pam, you back yet?
I am back, yes, thank you. And I, as always, enjoy Betty's writing. I have to agree, she has been playing outside the box lately, so very cool there. I like how this is a spill of different kinds of imagery. I like the mention of Juliet's heartless Romeo strolls down sleek streets, moves to his heartbeat, and then tied up in gold strings, tangled sharp in wedding rings, karma consumes me. I like the idea of somebody feeling as if, you know, like that karma is basically the end of them, that they're almost like as if the idea of revenge consumes them. And then she tosses in the Grimm's fairy tales was a nice touch. You know, it's interesting how with like only three short lines per stanza can have you jumping from one image to the next. It's got a very fanciful and surreal type feel to it. I like that. It's an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. All right, where would you like to take us next?
All right, up next, go ahead and grab the next one. And all right. And up will be Splashing in the Muck with Charles by Oak Blue 34. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. As soon as it opens up, it'll go like something. All right, here we go. I am a poetic nightmare to anyone who dares to read or listen with a cold washcloth flopped upon their brow. Some think me vain to share these posted words. Most think me self-indulged for thinking anybody really cares. Some regret the lack of polish, the lack of rhyme or meter, or complicated metaphors that no one, including me, understands. Some wish for more darkness, shedding light on the shallow human condition. Others want there to be a sprinkle of death, some want humor that tickles the nose, or a breath of restless spring, perhaps a rumbling storm of flashing angst, lovers scorned, made-up political rancor. But all you'll get from me is an invitation to author your own hell, or perhaps describe heaven if you dare. End poem.
Oh. Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Phil, why don't you kick us off? What'd you think?
I really like this because it's something simple and sweet and to the point. And I think that basically says, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. Everybody wants something different. It's all about perception. It's all about what the reader wants. And what you're gonna get from him is what you're gonna get. And you can self-indulge in whatever you want to do, but he's not going to complicate things. He's not going to try to sit there and be something he's not. He's not going to try to, you know, be more abstract to more than he is. And his invitation is that if you can write your own hell, or perhaps you can even describe heaven if you dare. And that is a big step saying that. And I think this is an excellent write and a great, a lot of wisdom, actually. So great job there, Oak.
Thank you, Phil. Zombie, how about you?
I thought that this was a really fun write. It's I love the description of a poetic nightmare, and then following that is not a nightmare at all. So a bit ironic in it of itself, but I agree with Phil, and I think that this is really. The author here, Oak, is presenting themselves as like, yeah, this is the way that I write. I'm not going to try to become something or force myself to write in a way that doesn't feel like my tone of voice. And in poetry, I feel like that's really important because you're trying to speak in your own voice. Most importantly, trying to speak in a way that communicates the ideas in your brain in a way that you feel them. And I do like the descriptions of different types of poetry that people may want to read, something less polished, something more dark or more morbid. I think that going over those different sort of genres in this poem really encapsulate what it's about, which is showing that people have different ways of wanting to consume media. People have different ways that they create and consume the art that is in the world.
Great thoughts there, Zombie. Thank you very much. All right, Cam, you got to read it.
Yeah, that was a fun read. Sorry, phone screen issues. I know where the mute button is, but the phone screen just keeps not coming on so that I can. But, yeah, no, that
press
was, that was definitely. But that was a fun read. I enjoyed it. I do like how he went through all, and it kind of, to me, poked fun at people who expect the same thing over and over again. Like, you know that everybody has their own taste of what they like, you know, as far as poetry goes, but it almost seems sometimes as if people feel like if it doesn't fall into their realm, it's not good poetry. It's such a gentle bite, too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's not, Oak Blue 34 isn't one of those who comes out swinging with his poetry to where you felt like the teeth went in really deep, but you feel like they just scraped your skin and made a little bit of a point. And the whole idea here being, hey, you know, somebody said, this is who I am, take me or leave me. And you know what? Good poetry doesn't have to be limited to what you think it is. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, gang. I like the thought with the title, Splashing in the Muck with Charles. There's an ease of thought there. He's not around. I'll just don his meat suit for a while and see what it's like under his skin. And that's where that comes, that opening line. I'm a poetic nightmare to anyone who dares to read. All right, there's that self-flagellation you all get from a Bukowski, and then most think you're self-indulged. There's a truism in that. The lack of rhyme or meter, he didn't bother with either of them, couldn't care less. And although he did delve in this metaphors, he wasn't a complicated man. He was straight up, told you how it was. So there's a nice touch of actually walking within that skin and evoking the thought and adding some of his own personal touches, but I like the ending too. But all you get from me is an invitation to author your own hell, or perhaps describe heaven if you dare. So there's a note of humor at poking fun at people who expect something and are never taken with the thought that actually comes with the write itself. All right, Pam, we're coming back at you.
All right. Now, Zombie, you are in Late Night Poets, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, wonderful. Then I'm going to put up the next poem and have you give it a read for us. Here we go, just a few seconds. And all right, up next is Letter to Van Gogh by Thomas Blacken. And if you don't mind, please read that for us.
Oh, sorry, I have to pull it up.
Okay, if you don't see the link, you might have to just refresh your page.
Yes, my phone's just very slow.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah, there are some nights my Kindle Fire is a pain in the ass, too.
All right, Letter to Van Gogh. The illusion is that you are simply reading this poem. The reality is that this is more than a poem. Charles Bukowski. Dear Vincent, if I am like your canvas, a mixture of all on the palette, how did you paint with such colorful mud? I can't bring myself to fall in love with your oil paintings very much, because like myself and Charles Bukowski, it remains primitive. I'm so much like you. It's scary. No, I'm not Dutch. I've gone Dutch, but mostly I always end up paying for it in the end. Duke is German, so almost Dutch, mostly he was an asshole. What I mean is our personality is similar, you and I, so as to be disconcerting. And it is for that reason that I can't bring me to truly appreciate your work. I do love Starry Night, though, but mostly because of John Denver. He's dead, too. I think it's kind of squirrely and stuff. Maybe it's because of the absence. Duke loves wine, and mostly I drink vodka. Poetry is not as pretty as your pastoral attempts, or mine. I wish that I could have warned you that whores make poor lovers because they've been hurt too often to one too many beds, abandoned too frequently, disappointed from one too many broken promises. And being too sensitive yourself, they'd have made a poor match, except on cold nights. Here's my opinion. I think if you'd have given your heart instead of a listening ear, maybe, just maybe, and maybe not. But I think you misunderstood. Perhaps you will listen now. Duke never did. Duke seems to think once a woman turn on, you forget it. Exactly what was with the ear anyway? I think Mary Magdalene was beautiful too. I would not have shot myself for her though, been there, done that. She still smiles like the Mona Lisa when she remembers. She thinks it's funny. Perhaps you should have taken up drinking and writing poetry instead, like my friend Duke. He drank himself to death, I think. I'm not sure. I can Google it. Anyway, you can sleep now. No one to hurt you here. When we meet, can you teach me how to paint? Love you. P.S. If I drop the E in the middle of my name, does that make me Dutch or German? End poem.
Great read, Zombie. Bravo. Thank you very much. Your voice was perfect for that. Excellent. All right, Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I really like this. And, yeah, I have to agree. Definitely an excellent read there. I like that he went with the letter style like he did before in one of our other contests. But this one had a bit of a twist. I really like how he's writing to an artist from the past, telling him about another poet that, you know, he doesn't relate to. It's like the whole idea of I relate to you, and you're so much like me, and I want to tell you about this Kowski guy who is not like us, but maybe, just maybe, Bukowski knows something that we don't know because, you know, he's not always willing to, you know, go Dutch. He's not always willing to cut off his ear, you know. I particularly like how raw and edgy he gets with lines like, I wish I could have warned you that whores make poor lovers as they've been hurt before. And there's such a brutal honesty in the idea that with people who have been hurt, it's difficult for them to love. And, you know, the wonderful, you know, and I like that he's the humor in the end, but the idea of, you know, he drunk himself to death. I believe, I don't quote me on this, I think Bukowski died of a type of cancer, if I remember right. Let's see, where is this? Been there, done that. She still smiles like the Mona Lisa when she remembers. She thinks it's funny. Perhaps you should have taken up drinking and writing poetry instead. And, of course, the question, what's up with the ear anyways? Because, you know, it's like that whole hypothetical question that, you know, if you could sit on a bench with any famous person throughout history and talk to them, and if that person was Van Gogh, one of the first questions in your mind would be, like, why the ear? You know, why not the small toe or something you didn't need as much, you know? So I just enjoyed this very much.
Great comment there, Pam. And Belle got a kick out of that little toe. So, Belle, why aren't you going next? What'd you think?
I was on my toes.
brilliantly, but the right is beyond brilliant. I mean, it really spoke to this, to the whole meaning of what you were trying to get here with Rakowski. I mean, this is something I've been waiting for someone to come up with, and it's just, I mean, it just struck me to the chest because it is so cynical, it is so witty, it's so sarcastic, and it's so like whatever. This is, you know, this is. Let me just go on and put it out there. I'm going to ask you anyway. And why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? Because that's how we are. We're all so critical of other people's work, but yet we're more critical of our own. And I think that's what he's trying to say. You know, I could have helped you out if you'd have helped me. If I could have, you could have seen what I write and what my illusions are. So to me, this is, wow, it's got me tongue-tied because I'm just like in awe. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Excellent. Great comment, SL. Thanks. And Zabi, you got three. How about you?
Oh, I thought this was wonderful. It was truly so fun to read. I love the letter format of it. It really feels like a letter to a friend almost for how at times it becomes like so casual with the speech. I feel like because of that almost casualness, it's very like the informality of it brings a lot more closeness to the write. And I think that deciding to connect these two artists like a painter and the poet together over the differences in their work and the differences in their lives is a really fascinating take on the prompt. And I enjoyed reading it a lot, and I enjoyed the poem extraordinarily. there was a part that I was going to talk about. Again, on the letter format of it, with the quote introduction to draw back to the prompt and then the beginning of the letter, I like how it ties itself together so quickly and it manages to create an in-depth conversation despite only having one side of it.
Well said. Thank you very much there, Zabi. I agree with y'all. Sal, you hit on the sarcasm, the witty, the cynical thought that runs in this. I like the vein, too, of running himself between these two masters of one art or another, Van Gogh and Bukowski, and likening himself on both levels to some point. To either side, and then offering up all these questions. That there's a ton of humor in this, and it does read like an ease of thought rolling off a Bukowski tongue. I am so much like you, it's scary. No, I'm not Dutch. I've gone Dutch, but mostly I always end up paying for it in the end. Now, that's a nice kind of a Bukowski thought, but then he turns around. Buk is German, so almost Dutch. Mostly he was an asshole, but then again, he also said that of himself. He'd write that in his poetry. And what else we got? I didn't like that thought. Here's my opinion. I think you'd have given your heart instead of a listening ear, maybe, just maybe, and maybe not. But I think you misunderstood. Perhaps you will listen now. But Buk never did. Buk seems to think once a woman turn on you, forget it. Exactly what was with the ear anyway. So there's that questioning thought of both of them. What the hell is one offering up with the other one? But meanwhile, he's already hit on the thought that he's always paid for it in the end as well. So it walks that line of between the two artists themselves and him kind of sitting squarely in the middle. And maybe I am a bit more like both of them together as opposed to a singularity. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right, well said there, Rex. I'm glad you brought up that part about mostly he's an asshole, because that was another great part. All right, up next we have Spam It or Eat It by Collapse, and that has the SoundCloud, so I'm going to go ahead and find that and push play.
I unfortunately, I actually have to leave for tonight. Thank you so much for all the reads. And I had a lot of fun, so I will listen to the rest of this in the morning. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for stopping by, Zombie.
Thank you.
Good night, Zombie. Thank you for joining us. All right. Now I'll go ahead and push play. Here we go.
Spam it or eat it. So you think you're part of an elite poets club just because you have friends that read your shit and clap their hands with emojis and say, pretty please, give me some more of that crap? Then you have so many likes because you scratch your friend's back and vice versa. And lo and behold, your number of likes climbs like casualty rates due to COVID. But does it really mean that your poetry is quality based solely on the number of likes it has? What are the poets that don't give a fuck whether they produce manure or masterpiece, nor if they collect a phenomenal amount of likes in their poetry, or just a one lonely like will suffice, but it's a gem nevertheless that will be lost in internet wasteland, its carcass laid out to rot in the sun, to be picked on, cannibalized by the praying vultures of plagiarists who don't give a damn about ethics. They'll cut and paste the best similes and metaphors, spruce them up with a few addition of theirs and most of yours, and bingo, they'll send back out repackaged under the false label of their authorship, while the real artist or poet writes for the sake of writing, not necessarily to be read, because all that poetic stuff is all crammed inside their head, and just need an outlet, and they come out sometimes neatly sliced, served as a fancy strawberry shortcake served with fine bone china, with grandmother's lacy napkin, not to forget the Tiffany sterling silver fork that you daintily sink into it, a ready-to-eat poesy, unlike the rambling, harping kind that lets the sneering vial of sarcasm ooze out of the literary tube too much over-the-top monologue of what constitutes proper poetry, not the stream of consciousness nagging personified in the offering of a spam dinner served directly from its can with lid attached like the one you're reading now. Happy perusal. Bon appétit. End of ranting.
Great read, Colab.
Woo!
And thank you very much for the SoundCloud. That was a nice big fuck you to everybody. Wow. All right, Phil, I heard you clapping. What'd you think?
Oh, my God. This is the bomb. This is in your face. This is to all those who think they're the shit. You just got served. Served a big fuck you. You're not that great. Just because your friends clap and say, oh, and give these emojis. Because, you know, and she hit it on the head when she says, the ones that really write to write, you don't care. I don't care if people really comment on my shit. I don't care. I really don't. I don't care if I win the war. I don't give a crap because I do it for me. And I think that she hits that home is, you know, it's not people lose. They hear it's not a competition. It's a competition in your own mind and your life. And then that's what it comes down to. You're competing with your own thoughts. And expressing yourself and conveying them so that people can understand what you're going through. Maybe you can help them. But these other people that are out here, like she says, they will spruce up a metaphor. And because it happened not too long ago, and I was like, you know what? That is not. And I called the person out. I said, you didn't write that shit. I did. That is not your saying. You know, I see Sid's a blind man. That shit is so old. You know, you didn't just make that up. That's not your writing. So I'm sure that person's pissed at me, but I don't really care. But, you know, write for who you are and write for what you want and not worry about what others are thinking or what who's going to get to the award, who's getting, you know, front page pick. I could care less about that kind of crap. I enjoy those that here on Late Night Poetry because a lot of them that come here do write to write, and they write from their heart, and they write and they give – they offer something to the reader, and that, to me, speaks volumes. And that's what this piece says. Colab, you kicked ass. I love her. She's awesome. Great job.
Oh, wonderfully said, Phil. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, how about you?
Well, it's definitely a bold write, hard-hitting. You know, it calls people out who think they're better than everybody else, so I like that. And I really like the lines because all that poetic stuff is all crammed inside their head and just needs an outlet, and they come out sometimes neatly sliced, sliced, served as a fancy strawberry shortcake. I like that she went with the imagery of food, and then, of course, near the end, it says, personified in the offering of a Spam dinner served directly from its can. And instantly, you just hear that, like, then you squeeze the can and it makes that sound, like that really just icky, moist sound. And, you're like, yeah, well, I don't need a helping of that. Thank you very much. Although if you slice it up and fry it, then it's sliced slightly more edible. But unfortunately, some people's poetry can't be sliced up and fried. So just an excellent night and very well done.
Yeah, this was a nice and biting piece. This center section in here that I liked, or just a one lonely like will suffice. But it's a gem, nevertheless, that we lost in internet wasteland, its carcass laid out to rot in the sun, be picked on, cannibalized by praying vultures or plagiarists who don't give a damn about ethics. Now cut and paste the best similes and metaphors, spruce them up with a few additions of theirs and most of yours, and bingo, they'll send back out repackaged under the false label of authorship. Ooh, boy, is that a call out to those lackluster... Tinkerbells who think, it's all good. Nobody will notice a damn thing. Yeah, there's something in language that when you see it, you can attach to somebody because it has a particularly distinctive flair and nature that sits under one person's mentality, and you notice that. And I love that ending. Happy perusal. Bon appetit. That was a lot of fun. Got awful quiet in here.
I'm sorry. I'm looking up and down and reading this. We're here. And as always, you made a wonderful comment.
You're mutating together? Oh, wow. Co-mutation.
Hey, you mutate together.
you put us both to sleep simultaneously. We're like, let's take a nap. Let's go lay down together, felon. Rex was making a comment.
Oh, shit. I'll just have to shut my mouth. Then we'll not.
But,
is that your clever way of saying I'm overblown in the windbag department?
Well, I wasn't trying to be subtle, but okay.
You said it now.
Yeah, hardly.
No, I really enjoy your comments, Rex. I just enjoy picking on you. But, okay, so what I wanted to ask you about is I actually noticed there's two rights that you posted on here from Felon, and I'm not exactly sure how that happened.
I know. The one of them was original, and then I go back.
It was original.
And I found another one. What the fuck's this? So I posted that, too. The other one disappeared.
I rewrote it, y'all. There's another one. I don't like that one.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. I wasn't sure, so I put them both up.
All right, I was just checking. So you did get to read the right one, though?
You did, yes, I did, because it's Prodigy's Wrongs,
okay.
Whatever, ink or something like
wonderful.
That.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Then I will go ahead and grab another poem, and all right, up next is A Wild Ride by Too Mysterious and Felon. Would you give that a refresh, please?
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to refresh. All right, this is by Too Mysterious, and that was a wrestler. No, it was Mysterious. I'm sorry. Mysterious, that was his name. Anyway, Too Mysterious, A Wild Ride. You're right. One should go out screaming, even if it is in some nightmare of their own devising, then this is not a poem. It's not a poem. It's not a vehicle for people uncomfortable with traveling outside their own minds, afraid of heights and drowning, but willing to sink into the depths of the feel something besides them. When the fails, they walk to the nearest bar, not thinking twice about ordering a numbing agent over ice.
Great read, Val. Thank you very
Thank you.
Much. All right, yeah.
I like this. I see too mysterious writing all the time, but I don't see her writing too often for the shows. And so it's really good to see her. I like her style. I like how this just flows almost in a straight line with only 1 to 4 words per line. And the whole idea of people, I really like the, for people uncomfortable with traveling outside their own minds, afraid of heights and drowning, but willing to sink to any depths. That whole idea of, you know, there's certain fears that we're willing to face, and, you know, like the physical fears, but the emotional fears, having to deal with that which emotionally hurts us, we want to drown, we want to numb. I think this is just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. All right, Phil, how about you? You got to read.
Oh, I agree. I agree with Pam. That same area of where it says, and in some nightmare of their own devising. And this is not a poem. It's not a poem. It's a vehicle of people for people uncomfortable traveling outside their own minds. And, you know, you're afraid of heights and drowning, but willing to sink at any depth because, yet, you know, some people, they're afraid of something, but yet they just jump right on in. Anyway, they already know it's a sinking ship, and they're just putting that little life vest on, thinking it's going to save them going down with the Titanic, not realizing that the suction on that thing is taking them to the bottom with it. So, and when the fails, they walk to the nearest bar, not thinking twice about ordering numbing agent over ice. Bam, there you go. That's the only way you're going to get through life is just to numb it with something, become intoxicated on something else. So not necessarily alcohol or drugs, but just intoxicate yourself with something else that will numb the other shit that you've already done. So it's excellent, excellent, brilliant, right?
It was. I like this. There's one line in here that hits me. It goes with that first stanza. It feels something besides numb that speaks to me of intense fear. Of walking outside of that numbness, the refusal to live life, so to speak, to enjoy life. So the only way to get through it, like you said, Phil, is to go back into that bar and get more of that numbing agent, stick it over ice and have a few of those just so you can revert to that lesser zone where the fear can't crawl in because you're too damn numb to notice it anyway.
So right, here, have here, okay. Maybe watch this.
Exactly. And I like the straightforward style in which she writes that. I thought that was
well. It goes
cool.
To that sort of like bar flies.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're always in there. They do their little bit of complaining. But they're in there just to get the buzz on to take away the edge of life itself.
Yeah. And keep company with like-minded people. They want to keep it's like you want the kind of company that's just going to simply say you're right for drowning your sorrows and numbing everything away.
Misery loves company.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah, misery doesn't do well on its own.
No.
Agreed.
No, that's for sure. All right. So, you know, that's a sign of good poetry when you can get conversation from it, in my opinion.
Yada, yada.
All right. So, I'm actually going to, because it fits and because I want to, I'm going to put my poem up, but I'm going to have Rex read it because it needs a male voice. Well, it doesn't need it, but I want it to have a male voice. So, with that being said.
Am I being punished?
Yes, you are. You're being punished. Read my poem, please.
Oh, shit. Okay. If Bukowski tried to write a haiku... I am right. I reek of last night. There's a stranger in my bed. I'm too distracted. By the way, a stream of piss sounds like the fountain at the city park to count syllables or lines, or even the time it takes for me to meditate on this potential right. Maybe I'll ask the woman her name and tell her to toss a penny in. Then maybe, just maybe, both our wishes will bloom like little yellow flowers. Yellow is simultaneously ugly and beautiful, like sunshine and urine dripping from the same damn cock. And
holy shit.
Go ahead. You can elaborate on that statement, Val.
Pam, this is what I'm talking about right here. This is fucking awesome. This, what? I mean, I'm just like in awe of this because, I mean, when you said this is what really got me, this is by the way the stream of piss sounds like the fountain at a park, city park, to count syllables or lines, booyah, that's it. I mean, you've put the things that are the most blunt and most, you know, in your face and just brutally honest, you just get brutal with shit. But at the same time, you put it where it's such wisdom and it's like, you make people have these aha moments because, like, why couldn't I think of that? Or that's what I was trying to say, but not, and I wanted to say it in that terms, but I couldn't get it in that smart-assy, sarcastic, you know, in your face kind of way, that brutal way. You just do it. You do it so subtle, but you do it just boom. It's like visceral. It just cuts you to the ground. And this is what I love about you. I mean, this piece is just amazing. Great job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I had the thought this morning while sniffing a household cleaner. You know, how would Bukowski write a haiku?
That might explain a couple of things.
Oh my God.
It kind of sounds like you actually stood behind the cask and watched him take a piss just so you can get the thought out.
I think she was watching him. She might have been holding the cock. She might have been holding the cock while he's pissing. Who knows? You know?
Oh, man. And then throw in the... both our wishes will bloom like little yellow flowers back to the piss. Yellow is simultaneously ugly and beautiful. Again, back to the piss, like sunshine and urine dripping with the same damn cocks. Well, yes, there can be pleasure, but you know what? The damn thing pisses out the same hole and offers up the seed.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
The piss wears away. What goes in comes out.
Ah, yes. A little ray of sunshine, but goddamn, that stuff is awful smelly in the morning after you've had all them beers and booze.
It's like, whoo.
Oh,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
this is just
brilliant.
Pam, I'm just
honestly, considering the fact that I have a couple of sons and used to be married, it should not come as a surprise that I have heard men pee in the toilet before. So... it's not really that hard of a size. It's not like it's a mystery size.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
But, all right. Well, I appreciate you.
Yo, couldn't you aim a little better? Wipe the damn shit up.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness gracious. I tell you. But, all right, we're going to go ahead and get some more poems.
Oh, that reminds me. That reminds me of it's an old black woman. She's got her two grandsons are over, and they're in the bathroom, and they've got tape at distances from the toilet. And they're and she's, what the hell are you guys doing? Oh, we're just seeing who can pee further. And these are the lines to show which one did it best.
Them kids would have had their asses whooped. They were mine. They wouldn't have been,
Oh, yeah.
Them kids would have been, it would have been a bad day for them. They'd be in child protection custody. That's when I got done.
Right? Oh, my gosh. I tell you. But, all right. We're going to go ahead and move on to Ropes Dangle by Grant G. And... it goes like this. Rope dangles, frayed and worn, not much use to no one, except that creature of great deception, the using addict. Under pressure they will lie, make up stories, fantastic stories full of blood and grime. Some will even rhyme, much like the author, the poet, like you and I. How many times have you replaced that rope with thicker twine? How many webs must a spider spin to catch an addict lie. Just sellers make lots of money, but not in the world they live. Running noses only drip, causing splashes with that chin. Only monkeys chatter, reaching for moons, baboons groan. A little line, that's all it takes. The parrots sing, wings flap, heads nod, feet tap. Illicit themes. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Damn. Yeah, it's kind of had me think of the ropes dangling the monkeys. There's that sort of remember that game, a barrel full of monkeys, and you gotta pick the monkeys up the curves. That's kind of a strange thought that ran in my mind with that. And then the thought with the attic, which was a nice. How many webs must a spider win to catch an attic lie? And then if you look at these. These could be run as singular thoughts by themselves, but they actually weave pretty good together. Under pressure, they will lie naked stories, fantastic stories full of blood and grime, some will even rhyme. Nice touches. And then it brings that thought into the, bestsellers make lots of money, but not in the world they live. Yeah. They don't write about themselves. That'd be too much. Nobody wants to read that boring stuff. People want to read something boring. Rip-roaring, fantastic. Well, how about you, Phil? What'd you think?
Well, this really, Rope Dangle is an excellent title to this because basically they're saying, you know, in order to get that monkey off your back, it's either that or take your life. You know, you give you an inch, you're going to take a mile. You know, you take just a little piece of a rope. You take some strain, you're going to get a rope. And the thicker that the twine gets, is this, the more problems that you keep adding on. You know, you keep lying and lying and lying and lying, and you keep just, you know, dabbing into that illicit usage that you're used to, and it just breaks. You just have to keep telling this lie to that lie to this lie. You manipulate people to get to what you want, and that's that next fix and that hit. And it's just, wow, much like the author, the poet, and like you and I, how many times have you replaced that rope with thicker twine, and that is just piercing. And then the other one is only monkeys chatter, reaching for moons, baboons groan. A little line, you know, I just did another little line. That's all. Just another one. That's all it takes. The parrot sings, and then the wings flap. And that's when you take off. That's when it's in flight. Do the go get and to go get high, and then the head's not. It's bringing your head down, and then the feet tap is like after you take that hit, it's like woo, and then illicit things. And that's when you go into the same bullshit that you're just intoxicated and waiting for the next hit. Said, so, wow, this is hard hitting, very hard hitting.
How'd that go? Wasted away again in Margaritaville.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, your turn.
I really like this, right? I have to say, honestly, I think it's one of my absolute favorites by Grant G. I mean, it's his usual kind of short, impactful, hard-hitting line, but he really throws a bit more of imagery in there than usual. And I can't really quite place it, but, you know, there's really something about the only monkey's chatter, reaching for moons, baboon, groan. I like those lines. And I like that he went with the baboons because they're known for those pink asses, and so to me that represents those people who could just kind of let their ass hang out metaphorically.
The chattering monkeys and their baboons had me thinking of is that a representative thought to women and men?
Oh yeah, that
the chattering
be,
monkeys
more...
and then the baboons moan, then it's, oh, I kind of thought between men and women.
That could be. Or here's another thought. Now, isn't a group of baboons called a congress?
Yes, they are.
And so it could go in that direction at poking fun at Congress and the higher ups. I mean, there's definitely, and I think that's one of the great things about this poem is that while on the surface it's very much obviously about addiction and the like to be an addict. It also has kind of that layered feel of what people treat people who are addicted. Like do you, the idea of do you treat them as simply a political agenda, you know, and not as a human being who's struggling. At least that's kind of a thought I get. I think it's an excellent write and very well done.
I think you got on something there, Pam, because I think you really hit it, because along the lines also is what the lines that that politicians feed us. You know, they keep sitting there sniffing it up their nose, keep snorting it, and thinking, getting high off the fact that we're believing in they're brainwashing people, and they get everybody at each other. The babbings and the monkeys that are chattering is not just it's the Congress, it was also society with that at the same time, and that you know, they're going to keep giving us rope to hang ourselves. Because we keep leaving the shit they're telling us. So I think you were onto something there. We did.
Ah.
Uh-oh, we're having a moment. Oh, okay. I thought we were having a moment of silence there. Or Rex
stopped. I like referring to that bunch of sitting in those 535 seats, 600 seats as a murder of crows.
There you go. That's another good one, a murder of crows. It's actually fun to learn what all the different kinds of groups of animals are called. And it makes you wonder who came up with all those names. All right.
Yeah, what would the crows doing in the first place going a murder?
Well, you wonder. I don't know. Is it connected with Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven? Like, maybe they just got them mixed up and, I you know.
You know what they call a bunch of felons? Bitches. I'm sorry.
Oh, too funny.
I'm getting sleepy. But yeah, a bunch of felons is bitches. That's what I would pack up it for.
I like that. That's funny. All right. So up next we have Marching by Babbler. And Rex, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Marching by Babbler. Life marches on, second by second. Little soldiers falling dead, losing the battle. How many soldiers do you have? Tallying as they fall. Epitaphs carved in diamond, sacrificed lives spent eating, shitting, sleeping, sitting, staring at screens, filing reports. Gettysburg corpses strewn out, tiny crosses in Virginia. For what cause? What purpose? What flag flew at the end of the pole? White. All of the flags are white. How many militant markers scribed their last breath while you were reading this poem? Another cross on the field. End poem. All right, Pam, you get to lead.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Oh, my goodness. I tell you, I've missed Babbler. I'm looking forward to calling into the show tomorrow. And I wish you could have called in tonight, but it's definitely understandable. I like the idea of how visiting the graves, visiting or thinking about the soldiers, the dead soldiers, and then she goes into the Gettysburg corpses strewn out, tiny crosses in Virginia, for what cause, what purpose, what flag flew at the end of the pole, white, all of the flags are white, how many million markers scribed their last breath. I feel like that there's, I don't know. I'm trying to grasp what it was. Like, I think it's just absolutely a beautiful and haunting rite, powerful imagery and metaphors. But I think oftentimes we think we're fighting a war for a good cause, and we do that by sending people out to war, or even sometimes when we pick battles, you know, and we pick the battles that we shouldn't be picking. We're not looking at the full picture. I like how it touches on the idea that sometimes the things you think you're fighting for aren't fighting for. And then there's to end with another cross on the field is kind of just a sardonic, not sardonic as in ha-ha funny, but just kind of a biting way to say, look, this is the religion you fight under. This is the God you fight under. And once again, here's a family that's lost a husband, a son, a brother, and your religion symbol is once again there. I just feel like there's a lot of strength and bite in these lines and that it's very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Phil, how about you?
Well, I really got something different. And what it spoke to me is that at the end of the day, it's when we're fighting each other here in this, in our nation, and that, you know, as life goes on and on, we still all eat, shit, sleep, and sit the same way and look at the same reports. But yet, the gay bird corpse strung, and the white flag, or the white flag is because the American flag has not been yet made, and it's just white flags because that I've given up and saying concede, and because in the end we are, one side is going to concede because the other is going to be relentless and taking lives after lives after lives. So how much more do we as society have to do when we should be unified as a whole fighting each other? What flag does this fucking America or this country need to go under for us to actually see that we are one and not divided? We need to stop all this bickering and all this bullshit, because people already die for our rights and for our freedom, and just let it be, let it go and go on what you got in front of you. And just be blessed that you're here and you're alive and you're breathing, taking air in. So this just really speaks volume. This is a very deep, well thought out rite. Enjoyed it.
I like that, Phil. Thank you very much. There's that pointed note in the that opening stanza, time, it ticks on no matter what. And I like that second one. Epitaphs carved in diamond, sacrifice life spent, eating, shooting, sleeping, sitting, staring at screens, filing reports. There's that kind of a hard edge to those last two lines, staring at screens, filing reports. There's that note of, you guys aren't sacrificing. You're looking at screens for whatever reason, and you're filing the necessary reports on whatever else. But I like what you said, the flags are white. There is that notice of, hey, you got to lay down the crap. And the idea is... we've gotten used to the idea of being spread out across the world, especially after the last 20 years sitting in Afghanistan and the Middle East there for no apparent reason other than to make billions of dollars for people who like to tell us, you know what, you guys aren't worth shit. So this is what we're going to do. And the reality is this country is great. Just open your eyes, open your hearts, open your minds, and quit biting into that thought of separation between this, that, and the other thing, because it has to be that way. No, it doesn't. It doesn't walk that way. Unity is a thought that that everybody should be looking on, instead of separation and segregating everybody into little neatly packaged bundles, which you can then set upon each other as the leading cause. Oh, this is why America's bad. Yeah, you've got everybody biting at everybody else's throats. Why? Because you enjoy the fucking muck.
Yep.
All right, Dan.
Well said, Dan. All right. Up next, we have... Let me walk back to my Kindle Fire because I paced too far. Words Just Can't by Rob Azza and Felon. Will you read that for us, please?
Sure. Let me refresh here. Okay. Words Just Can't by Rob Azza. Our words can't breathe, can't fuck, can't lick a face, can't strangle a foe, can't ride with black angels. They just can't. Our words can't flag a taxi, can't roll a smoke, can't pay an old invoice, can't lay in bed all day reading Celine. They just can't. Our words can't drive to a poetry reading, can't walk around the tab, can't sucker punch someone by the bar show, can't worship any gods. They just can't. Our words, they just can't do many things. They can't call into work. They can't run with the bulls. They can't blow the trumpets. They can't bet on the horses. But our words can do many things. They can bring us peace and our work of our minds and grant us stability and solace and personal satisfaction and widening of our true dimensions. That's why we write for grit, pity, nostalgia, for weight. And that's good enough for me. End point.
Great read, Bell. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. I like this. It's different. What do you
think?
So
here's my thing. Is earlier today, I was sitting in my shit brown recliner reading this poem. and thinking. And, you know, because I like Rob Azza. I like his poetry. But I don't know if it's because of the way my mind works, but all I can focus in on is the idea that he's saying all these different things that words can't do, and yet in my mind, most of these things, we need words in order to accomplish them, in order to make our goals and our desires known to ourselves or other people. We freaking need words. So he's listing off all these things that we need words for and saying words can't do them, and it's just confusing my overly literal brain, but so what I thought
I think
as
there's
I was
a
doing
bite
my
in this.
Is it okay? All right, but I mean, I really
I think the bite
like
is how everybody says words are today are they're microaggressive. They have thoughts of their own. Oh, the word is racist. It's kind of pointing a little fun at those who paint words as that which they're not really.
Well,
because with
I think
the words,
that they're not words,
you're not
actually
offering up the inflection or the tone or the context with it. All you're doing is offering up the word that was said. That means nothing.
So it's about reading what's behind, learning to read what's behind the words. The emotion,
Yeah. All right. You take how media does these days. They won't offer up the whole conversation. They'll only offer up that tidbit that they say is nasty. It's rude. It's so hateful. But it isn't because it's taken out of context. It doesn't have the balance of the rest of the sentence around it. So it's used right there to drive a particular thought, narrative, and inflection to rile the people up.
Absolutely. Well, if that makes sense, I like that. And I know Felon has something to say, but I have one more thing I would like to say is that despite my confusion, I did really like that ending, and that's why we write for girth, for pity, for nostalgia, for weight, and to think that's such a small list, because really there's a huge list of why each individual person writes and what each person gets from allowing their self to pour out in their poetry. So I really appreciated that. And as always, I appreciate Rob as a poet and a person. So, and of course, Ellen, I know you're just chomping at the bit, so.
No, I'm being patient. I'm sitting here eating a Caesar salad. But I get something totally different. I get the fact that words can't mean anything without action behind each one of them. You, like licking a face, you can't breathe unless you have, you know, an action from someone. It can't strangle a foe. Like when you're saying, like, I'm going to choke you the fuck out. You can't choke them the fuck out unless you have the hands behind the, you know, you have to put action behind your words for them to have meaning. Words can say a lot of things, but they don't mean shit unless there's something, a positive pressure or a positive energy behind it, pushing it forward to say, this is what my words mean. This is the action that comes behind it. This is what you're going to get from my words. And you have to have some kind of energy behind that word, and that's proof in the pudding. That's following through what your words say And that's like hailing the cab and, you know, rolling the smoke, or I'm going to go roll the smoke. Well, you know, you can say it all day long, but you got to go damn do it. You know, that's what I gather from it. And, you know, and they can't call into work unless you dial the damn phone. You know, you have them dial the number. You know, that's what I got from it. So you have to put energy behind what you're saying, and you have to, you know, follow through, and they're not just running your damn mouth. You have to show up or hood up and get out. So that's what I got from it.
Well, that was more eloquently said than what I offered. See? Context.
Well, I think
right,
you
Pam.
See, I'm eating salad. I'm eating salad, see?
All right. Up next is Surprise and Torture by Ted Pilot. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Surprise and Torture by Ted Pilot. While prancing on a fishing line tightrope, choking on a turn of phrase, and spinning hysterical in a trapeze craze, to hat-tilting hyperbole wordplay, a bomb blast in the Middle East killed 19 pedestrians, cutting prices to zero, shrinking a shopping mall to dust and rubble. Antagonizing edits spent revising, dull as a board duster, pickup sticks, pulling hairs in 2 cent sparkler glimmers of balding madness, while seeking a spark of genius, driven by an illusion, hiding from us fools, horse playing at riders and tomfooling delusion, bereft of a good luck toss, while arrow-headed men and women smile and fuck, driving trucks, shooting guns at stop signs. The sun shrunk, Earth heated up, Mars invaded while you wage war with the keyboard, searching for a combination to unlock something golden. All of the words have been typed. Everything has been said. Waste, slave, bleed for nothing but a premature, bloody-blown temple ejaculation. Death by your own gunslinging hand, or rope and pill-seeking throat if the statistics go as planned. Drop the pen. Throw the act on the fire of forgotten desires where your shoulders are massaged, unburdened by the weight, headlights stare a blank page insanity, stalking your shadows. Or write as the world burns, keep writing in hellfire, or as the world freezes over, march with pen strokes, meet the keyboard on Normandy shores, undeterred, words have always come. Fuck it, end poem. Damn, we're all loaded tonight on these things.
Right?
That's it. Now, ooh, that's a good one.
Absolutely.
I like it.
Well, continue on that thought there, Phil.
I think this is like one act under the, we're all under that one big tent, and it's this ring, and he's up on the actual tightrope, and he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders, and when he fails, or when he drops that big sword or whatever that keeps his weight distributed, he's taking out people left and right, and he's like, oh shit, you know, I kind of tripped up on that one right there. I took some people down with me, and then it gets on. It's the chaotic fatalities of war, and yet how we got that one person up there trying to balance this shit, and he don't care who he takes out. And he's just like, I just keep going. I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep trying to walk across this thing. I got it. And not really seeing the chaos and how the act itself is just brutal and bloody, and the throats that he's taken, you know, that he's taken out. He says, drop the pen, throw the act on the fire. Basically means stop writing the shit that you're writing, or the politicians or whoever it is. And think of the people that you have burdened, and think of the people that you are putting out. It's not just you. You're not the one out here in the trenches. You're up on this tightrope away from everybody else. You are protected. You're high above everything else, and only way you're going to fall is if you let go or you lose your balance. So, I mean, this is just an excellent write.
Ooh, nicely said, Phil. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, how about you?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, this is excellent. Hard hitting. It's edgy. I like there was some wonderful wordplay in here. I really like horseplaying at writers in tomfooling, delusion, bereft of good luck toss, while arrow-headed men and women smile and fuck driving trucks, shooting guns at stop signs. To me, that kind of spoke of trying to be something you're not. And I really like how Felon spoke on, not being the one in the trenches. And there's just some really visceral imagery in here. Everything has been dead, waste, slay, bleed for nothing but a premature, bloody, blown temple, ejaculation, death by your own gunslinging hand. Now that is just, that's the wordplay I'm talking about. That flow of words just hits you really hard. Stalking your shadow or write as the world burns, keep writing in hellfire as the world freezes over, march with pen stroke. I like that idea of no matter what is going on in the world, whatever kind of violence, whatever kind of brutality and ugliness and sheer horror of the human condition is going on, it needs to be recorded. You need to write about it in a raw and honest way and not cover it up with sugar and fluff. So I think this is just an excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said, ladies. I mean, this kind of hit on that sort of all of that while most of sit behind keyboards are looking for that nice, tight turn of phrase to author up that which they're trying to get across. They actually miss the initiality of that which is there to begin with. Well, why embellish it? Just put it out as what it is, the truth. I mean, it hits on that thought down near the end where it was meet the keyboard on Normandy shores undeterred. There's that notion of offer up some truth in that which you're trying to get across instead of spending so much time with the angle of the story that you're writing or what you're trying to get across that you actually miss that which is going on around you to begin with. Those blank pages are still blank pages because you're not actually getting anything out. And people are dying. There's craziness out there. There was that thought in that first one, in the Middle East, killed 19 pedestrians, cutting prices to zero, shrinking the shopping mall to dust and rubble. That's a hell of a thought rolled into one. Just looking for that hyperbole wordplay, but he offered it up in those last four lines there.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely well said there. All right, so
I think we've got
one
time
more.
For one more, don't we?
We do. All right, up next is Loud Angels by Peter Solway, and it goes like this. Buck on the scene, happy to say the least, with immortal amplification, thoughts of constellations, let death be known, address, sender, return, life of sullen disappointment. Buck in his morphine wagon, sirens to sing, loud angels for neighbors in heaven, worse than Swedish backpackers, happy with hearth of euros, deals of undress, chainsawed pine to spit, tomorrow to summit, God in the details, death to contemporary quails, end poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Fel, what'd you think?
I think this is someone that's watching the world go by as they're probably terminally ill and they're seeing things happen in front of them. And at the very end, it's just a chainsaw pine. Is that is the getting ready to split the wood to make his coffin to go ahead and bury his ass. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, that's what I get from it. I might be way off there, but that's what I see. But good write.
Nicely said, Belle. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, and that was a fun read. I tell you, it's good to see Peter's writing. It's intriguing. It's thought-provoking. I often have to dive into it several times. I do like the title with the play on words rather than being the Los Angeles, the lost angels. These are the loud angels. These are the ones that are going to get your attention. These are the dying, the ugly, the brutal, the those. And I like loud angels for neighbors in heaven. worse than Swedish backpackers. I don't know what he meant by Swedish backpackers, but there's this Saturday Night Live skit with this pregnant Swedish, this couple, is they're Swedish and they're pregnant, and everything's going right with her pregnancy, and you know, like she's gaining weight in all the right places. But anyways, completely obscure thought there. But you know, for that line there made me smile. You know, because you think of that overly blown Swedish accent that you see people imitate. I like chainsawed pine to spit tomorrow the summit. You know, I think to me that's the whole idea of people who are trying to aim for something that they're not going to make because they're just too busy running around like birds pecking at the ground. I don't know. As always, just wonderfully thought-provoking and layered, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts, Rex.
Well, that worse than Swedish backpackers kind of had me thinking of Benny Hill doing his little alpine shtick. What was it? Jorgen, du bist du jak-jak? Ja, Hilda, I bist du jak-jak. Especially with that thought with deals of undressing that at the bottom end of that. I know it's a twisted little bit of thought, but it was. And then that tomorrow, the summit got in the details, death to contemporary quails. There seems to be a lack of spirituality hitting on that note. Address, send a return, life of sullen disappointments. Buick in his morphine wagon, sirens saying there's death in that. And that opening with the immortal amplification, thoughts of constellations, let death be known. There is that kind of what Fell said, watching the world go by, so to speak. And I did like the loud angels for neighbors in heaven. Yeah, you're not supposed to have loud angels for neighbors. It's supposed to be peaceful and harpish.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. Right. Well, I have great show tonight, Rex.
Well, what's
thank you for
Tuesday
being here, Helen. All right.
Absolutely,
well, I'm glad
guys. I have to go to bed.
Well,
all
thank
right.
you for coming and spending the night with us.
Yes, thank you. Good to hear from you. I'm glad you asked. Twisted Tuesdays is doing poetry inspired by poetry. The contest is closed. There is room on the topic board, and it's very simple. Just either a pre-write or a new poem that's inspired by any poem or even just a line from a poem. It can be a classic poem. It can be a modern poem. It can even be, you know, a friend on all poetry. Just bring us that.
All right. Great show, Pam. Thank you very much. And Randy, Zombie, Felon, thank you for coming on board and hanging out with us. Much appreciated. Come back. We're going to do it again next week. And Babbler, thank you for the board. Arr.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Babbler. And 420. Next week is 420. We've got a contest running with quotes from Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson for people to check out.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. No
sense,
no seeds that you don't need. Acapulco gold is badass weed.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be fun next week. It sure is. All right.
Panama
yeah,
red. Panama red. Couple of tokes will put you in bed. All right. Good night, everybody.